passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's Dr. Kevin Show. I am so excited to have you joining us today as we are having my off and on again regular co-host, Reverend Lori Powers Otto, and a woman who inspires change. And if you don't believe her, go right to the Dr. Kevin Show on Facebook and you'll see it. It's on her t-shirt. She inspires change. Sarah Galadro. And I'm going to actually let Lori introduce her and kick our questionings off. And then I will be back to be my usual troublesome self here and there. I do want to remind people, this is a live call-in show. So you can call in at 202-570-7057. Again, that's 202-570-7057. And I'm actually going to shut up and let Lori talk. How amazing is that?
It is very rare, Dr. Kevin. I would say that. Yeah, I am so excited about tonight's guest. I cannot begin to tell you. Sarah Galadro is incredible. I mean, wait till you hear her talk. I mean, Sarah is the founder and executive director of Sarah Speaks Up. It's a nonprofit organization that promotes domestic violence awareness, advocates for domestic violence survivors, and provides sources to women, children, men, and families in need. I mean, that alone makes me so happy because she includes everybody. But she also is the founder of Veterans for Victims program. And this program connects the survivors of domestic abuse with military veterans who can encourage, empower, and support them through their difficult times, including escorting them to and from court when facing their abusers. And I'm telling you, that is so needed and so appreciated. I personally know several women who are survivors of domestic abuse, and they didn't have these resources. And it just warms my heart to know they're there. So thank you, Sarah. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm so excited to have this chat with you all.
So I this is such an important topic that so many people sadly still shy away from.
Yeah, you know, thank you for bringing that up, Lori, because that's pretty much where the name Sarah Speaks Up came from. It was the idea, you know, domestic violence and abuse was perceived as something that people were hush-hush about, and that's unfortunate because this is one of those things that really thrives in silence and darkness. And so it's when people begin to start speaking up for themselves that they say the truth of what's happening to them, and that's when they're able to start getting help.
Right. I mean, I still remember a story from many years ago when I was in banking, and we had a client and everyone knew she was being abused. And I almost got fired because one of the tellers said, well, if it was that bad, she would just leave. And I went off on her. I'm like, for one, I'm grateful that you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
But saying stupid stuff.
Exactly. And that is really one of those misconceptions, Lori, that it's so simple. It's just cut and dry. You know, a person can just easily pick up and go. And it couldn't be further from the truth. There's so many reasons why victims or survivors, how, what, you know, wherever they are in their journey, find themselves feeling or actually stuck in the situation, whether their marriage, children, you know, shared property, bank accounts, if financial abuse has taken place, then, you know, they can't easily just take their money and leave. They don't have access to it. And, you know, not to mention the fact that most often people who find themselves embroiled in the dynamics of abuse have really been mentally and emotionally beaten down and manipulated to the point where they start to believe, I don't deserve to get help. It's not that bad. This isn't really abuse. Nobody else will love me. It's actually my fault. And a long list of, you know, misconceptions that people believe.
Right, right. And I love that they speaking up for not just women, but for children and men and families, because I just was reading about a child, her whole life, her mother made her feel like she was less, and she believed it because that's the only narrative she was ever told. It wasn't until she luckily had a really good friend that helped her see that what her mother had told her was lies. But it's hard to get someone to realize that this person that's supposed to love them more than anyone in the world is actually abusing them.
Yeah, I do now work with people who have experienced childhood trauma, as did I. So I was raised in an abusive household. My father was abusive, and it really shaped the decisions that I made in my life, whether it be to do with my own romantic partner or not, just how I viewed myself, what I thought I deserved, and those kinds of things that you're talking about. So although Sarah Speaks Up started as, you know, very specifically focused on domestic violence, it seems to have organically branched out, and now the conversation goes deeper than to, you know, the domestic violence, I think, is a symptom of deeper issues, not only in the person who's being abused, but the abuser themselves. That doesn't mean it's an excuse for bad behavior, but I think that digging deep and looking underneath, you know, why people are doing these things, why are you accepting this behavior? Why are you treating a person that way? And these are some of the conversations that stem from talking with people who've experienced childhood trauma and survived their own abusive parents.
Right, right.
And I'm just going to weigh in a little bit. You know, one of the things that happens is, what is normal and acceptable gets rewired in the brain of the child.
Mm-hmm.
And when that rewiring occurs, it can be changed, but it's a process.
Right.
And, you know, like in any other process, when somebody is trying to overcome a deeply held incorrect belief system, you know, they are going to have to go back and not only understand how they got the incorrect belief system, but how much of their value and worth and view of the world got built around that system.
Exactly, right.
So
yeah, and that's a lot deeper work. And it's painful. It's difficult. It's hard. So, you know, definitely for anyone out there who's listening and, you know, any of this is resonating, you know, I just encourage people to really strengthen their support system, specifically when they're doing that deeper healing work.
Right. Right. So tell us more about Sarah Speaks. Tell us, you know, like, where can people hear you? You know, where can people get your message and, you know, and services.
Sure. Thank you for asking, Lori. I published a book, and it's called Hiding in Plain Sight, A Glimpse into the Reality of Domestic Violence. And that's available on Amazon or in bookstores. That is, the first half is personal stories of mine. And then the second half kind of breaks things down and tries to help and guide people to understand the dynamics a little bit more. So that's one resource. I also have a very active Facebook and Instagram social media platform. So you can message me through either of those. I do my own podcast called Resilience Rooted, which goes live on social media at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Thursday evenings.
Okay, so they can catch you right after this.
Exactly.
And on social media, is it your name or is it the company name? So what would they look for?
Sarah Speaks Up on social media.
Okay, so everybody look for that on Instagram and Facebook. And am I correct that you had some YouTube videos also? Is that correct?
Yes. So if you look up Sarah Gallardo on YouTube, I have been on different platforms as a speaker. The last live, you know, in-person speech that I gave was at a college in Boston about a month and a half ago. So I'm booked to speak at different live events now. You know, speakers, things kind of shifted quite a bit for us during and post-pandemic. Now Zoom is available, and so we are doing fewer in person. But that being said, I still do in-person events, which is nice.
Excellent, excellent. As I, like I said, I personally know people who've gone down this path and they didn't know where to turn. They just had no hope. And the little bit that I looked at your social media and YouTube and your schedule and your website, I wish they had had that, you know, because it yeah. filled me hope and even, you know, that's not where I'm at in life, but my heart breaks for those, like, I don't know. And it's little things too, that people don't realize that are hints to the abuse. Like
right.
I had a woman come in to open a bank account again. I haven't been in banking in forever. This was a long time ago. And she wanted to put her husband's name first, but bank policy required whoever opened the account be first.
Mm-hmm.
So then her husband came in with her to see me, and she said to him in front of me, I told her to put you first. And I said, she did. But if you wanted to be first, you should have opened the account.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I called him on his stuff. Now, not in a call out embarrassing kind of way, but in a way that said, I know what you're about.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
eventually that woman got help, got out, got, you know,
good.
Got her life. But, you know, so yeah, don't confront them head on like that, because you'll make it worse for the victim or the survivor.
That's but a really good point, and I'm glad you're bringing it up. You know, at one time when I was dealing with my ex-husband, who was extremely violent, and, you know, he had outbursts, whether that was yelling or throwing things. It was a very obvious kind of violence. And our landlord actually lived in the same apartment building and could hear some of our arguments. And one day approached me in the hallway and asked if I was okay, like if things were okay, if I was being abused. But I was with my ex-husband. He was standing right next to me. So you really, I mean, for those out there who feel like they could potentially be in a position to help someone who they suspect is experiencing this, really just don't ask them questions in front of their abuser, because it's exactly like you said, you could just be making the situation worse. And then another tip is too, especially if you're a family member and you're witnessing someone be abused, that's an extremely difficult thing to watch because you feel so powerless, but please try not to take the power and control away from the person you're trying to help, because then they will begin to feel like you are overbearing, you are taking their choices away from them, and you end up unfortunately lumped into the same kind of behavior as that abusive person.
Right. Right.
And sometimes when that happens, it puts the person in a place where now they feel like they're choosing between the family member and the spouse,
mm-hmm.
instead of the family member kind of saying, you know, taking them aside and just inviting them to talk, inviting to support
right.
them, asking them open-ended questions,
mm-hmm.
but leaving the choice between what's best for the individual, you know, in
right.
the relationship versus out of the relationship.
Exactly. Exactly.
Excuse me. So the other part of what you do, other than Sarah Speaks Up, which is wonderful, is that I find fascinating and I'd love to know more about, is the veterans program that you started. How did that come about?
Oh, this is a kind of a cool story. So thanks for asking. I was, I was out of the relationship with my ex-husband. He was in prison for a total of 4 years and he was up for parole. Now, I was called upon to give a victim impact statement to the parole board to, you know, and they would decide whether or not to release him or keep him for, I think it was another year. Now, I was kind of spoiled during the time when he was in prison because it was a time when during, you know, sort of my extraction from that toxic dynamic, I was very back and forth. My heart did not match my head, which a lot of people talk about dealing with. And so none of this was easy. None of this was cut and dry. And I knew he was behind bars, which meant I was at least, my child and I were at least safe for that amount of time. That being said, I'm bringing these fears with me to the parole hearing. And I didn't know, he wasn't even present physically. He was patched through on a screen, and I was not in his field of vision. So he could see whatever the camera was pointed at, and that was the parole board only. Once I began to speak, however, I could see the video of him. And he began rocking back and forth and was completely agitated and angry. That caused me to have a panic response. And so, you know, I started, like, I wasn't crying like I'm sad crying. It was just tears were automatically rolling down my cheeks and I'm shaking. And, you know, now this all happened. I already became a certified domestic violence counselor. I had already, you know, left this relationship. I had two people with me for support, and he wasn't there in person. Yet still, my trauma and panic response was so extreme that I struggled to do what I had gone there to do. Great, you know, I am grateful that I did. But upon leaving, I thought to myself, what must this be like for someone who, you know, oftentimes arrests happen one day and then court happens the following day. So then you have to show up. Now, this whatever event took place has been recent. This person who shows up, the victim shows up to speak and you know, they're still engrossed in this relationship. And I thought, what if they don't have support? What if they don't go to court because they're too scared? What if they lose custody or any financial support, or they can't say their piece and the person is released? So that's why I thought of needing this support. And then as I was leaving on the radio, I heard an advertisement for some veterans event, and it was just, the light bulb went off in my mind, and I'm thinking a couple things. First of all, veterans and domestic violence victims, or trauma survivors, if you will, are the two demographics of people with the highest rate of PTSD. And how wonderful would it be to connect those dots and cause understanding between these two groups of people who I don't think they typically are, you know, thought of as dealing with some of the same symptoms. And then two, unfortunately, sometimes soldiers will come back from active duty, and as their PTSD manifests itself in such a way that they have angry outbursts, sometimes violence, sometimes alcoholism, and that can turn into domestic violence. And if I were to sort of implant this program, maybe creating a community of understanding within the veterans themselves, and that those are some of the hopes that I have for this program.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I do. That's our first break. Start to get it.
That's the first break, and we'll be right back tomorrow to talk more with Reverend Lori and Inspiring Change Sarah here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time landing a job
and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Time. Tonight we have Sarah, and I'm going to stumble to your last name again, Galadriel. Did I get it?
Gallardo?
Gallardo.
That's great. This is, I like that one, though.
Gallardo. Maybe I'll think of a Lardo with gall. Galago.
Okay.
maybe that will do. I don't know. You know, You can never tell how the Dr. Kevin mind is going to work or not work.
Oh, this is wonderful. I hope I don't fit that description, though. That's all.
Yeah, well, I didn't say you were the gal, Lardo. I said
okay.
No. I value my life.
You're sweet.
our one and only, our goddess Lori, Reverend Lori Powers Otto. Sarah is an author and founder and executive director of Sarah Speaks Up. She helps victims and survivors of domestic abuse, and she works with military veterans, and she has done the journey of being a domestic abuse survivor. And she has a book out, and that book can be found on Amazon.com. And that book again is called
Hiding Sarah? In Plain Sight, A Glimpse into the Reality of Domestic Violence.
Okay, so peeking under the shades when you're hearing screams out the door. Right? Did I get that right? No.
Yeah.
And also, Sarah is a poet. And one of these days, when I do a poetry show again, which I do on a off and on semi-regular basis, Sarah is going to come on the show, and Sarah and I are going to have a poet off. She's going to read one of her poems. I'm going to read one of my poems. If we romance Miss Lori to come on and referee, I'm sure we'll have a great time. One of the things that you said that I wanted to comment on is, and this applies in some ways, I feel like it applies to that PTSD aspect, but it definitely applies to domestic abuse, and it also applies to sexual mm-hmm. abuse within the family and sexual abuse survivors, which is this, well, we just don't talk about it.
Right.
It's a forbidden subject.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, you know, and as somebody who survived every kind of abuse under the sun pretty much as a child, it was years later in talking to like older cousins and aunts and uncles, everybody knew, but everybody said, but you didn't talk about those things.
Right.
How now I'm old. The fact I'm not dead is amazing. So, but do you still find that that is a very prevalent issue today for the people that you work with? And I think that goes over to PTSD, because PTSD and any other invisible emotional and mental handicap or illness or whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
I think are things that people are more comfortable not talking about. And of course, I've dedicated my life to making people uncomfortable and think I have a fairly good success rate at that. But I would like you to address that. Is how prevalent of an issue is that still?
It really is still such an issue. However, I think that with the addition of the internet and social media, people now have platforms on which to begin speaking up. And people can follow certain influencers or messengers, as however you want to think about them. But yet and still, boots on the ground on a daily basis, most people are still carrying that shame. And it's just so unfortunate, the dynamic, the way that it plays out. The people who end up holding on to the shame are unfortunately, and by and large, the victims of a crime that was committed against them through no fault of their own. So when you really look at what has happened here, it's insult to injury. Not only have these people experienced trauma, whatever that looks like, then they are also left with the guilt and shame, blaming themselves, feeling that they are isolated, that they're broken, different, you know, whatever people believe about themselves, and that they don't have anyone to talk to about it. In fact, that they have to stay quiet. Now, some abusive people will actually threaten, whether that's an adult abusing a child and saying, you know, don't say anything to anyone, or, you know, I'll hit your sister or your mom, or, you know, I'll hurt the cat. These, whatever threats may have happened. Some other might just be such a fear in the person, the victim in this scenario, that they don't even have to be threatened necessarily. It's their fear is so large that it keeps them silent. And that's when these abusive dynamics are at their, that's when they shine, when their silence abounds, because nobody is doing anything about it and nobody's putting in any checks, you know?
Well, you know, I clearly remember myself that, you know, as a small child, I'm talking like 4 years old, that my abuser would come in, he'd put a pillow over my face, he'd start to suffocate me, and he'd tell me before he abused me even more that if I told my parents that he would kill them and it would be my fault.
Yeah.
So the people who stand outside and say, well, why didn't you speak up?
Right.
You don't know how badly that wiring gets messed up of what's right, what's wrong, what's okay, and what you're responsible for.
Exactly.
I mean, and then there is always, if you survive some abuse as a child, even if you're in a relationship with an adult that's even, you're bigger than, you and your mind become smaller and more helpless because you return to that perception of being the abused child. So even if, you know, because I've worked with men surviving abuse who married women who were 5'4 and they were 6'2 and their wives could still were still physically abusing them because they literally saw their wives when they were in the abuser role as bigger than they were.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that. They're like, oh, I mean, she's 5'4. How could she hurt you?
Right.
And that
too is
just ignorant. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, Kevin. Go ahead.
No, I'll finish. Go ahead.
I think that speaks to part of the reason why men in particular they struggle to speak up when something like that is happening. And I think part of the reason, and I think this is also common for many survivors, is that we are constantly feeling the need to explain ourselves. Why do we think and feel this way? Why do we allow this to happen? You know, all these kinds of, everybody's got questions and we're constantly having to explain where we're coming from, why things are the way that they are. And particularly unfortunate for men is the whole toxic masculinity and the, you know, misconception that men are stronger, that they couldn't possibly be abused, that physically that doesn't even make sense. That's not exactly the way this works. There are so many intricacies at play. And I think really people need to lead with empathy, ask questions with the intention of understanding rather than implying blame, and really stop and ask yourself, do you understand what this person could potentially have gone through? And if the answer is no, or even maybe, but not a definite yes, slow it down, check your judgment, and open your ears, because listening is imperative.
I just want to add to that, because I worked with a woman for years that had been
abused as a child and in her adult relationships, because that's right. But she told me one day she went to her mother to talk to her mother about why she allowed the abuse to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother said to her, "That was a long time ago. Get over it."
Oh, my goodness.
And minutes to respond. I mean, I couldn't even talk for a few minutes.
Yeah. And see, the whole get over it thing has got to really just drop from our vernacular. Because if you have any understanding of post-traumatic stress disorder or complex PTSD, which is my diagnosis, then you understand that I deal with the symptoms of PTSD every day, every single day, all the time. And you can't see it. Kevin, as you brought up earlier, this is an invisible ailment. And this is in our mind. And if people can't see it, they have trouble understanding it. And implying that people should just get over it. I'm talking about, I face my demons every day. I'm not saying I haven't gone through a healing process. I have. I also believe that healing is not linear, and that I don't think we ever really stop healing. So it's not a destination I've arrived at and then I'm just there, right? You know, this is an ongoing process that changes over time. So again, a lot of people don't realize, for survivors like us, the bravery looks like an everyday existence, because you can't see the war we're fighting in our minds.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, but what gives me hope for you, for other women and men that I've known, is the ones that, while they're going through this never-ending healing process, continue to live and to love again and to thrive and to, you know, all while fighting this demon.
Right. Yeah, honestly, that was one of the hardest pieces, was to continue and try to love again, to the vulnerability that it takes, especially for people like Kevin and myself who experienced childhood abuse and, you know, such severe trauma. That's a deep child wound. And that is something we carry with us. Now, learning to love again, or allowing ourselves to love ever in our lives, that is scary, to say the least. And I think in my experience, I didn't see parents that were an example of the kind of relationship I would want to recreate. I only learned by their mistakes. I only could see what I didn't want. So growing up, my process for finding a healthy relationship, or, you know, even trying at it, was unfortunately a process of elimination. And that's a steep learning curve, because mistakes were made. But over time, it kept improving for me, because I kept learning and I kept being open to whatever lessons were presented to me, you know?
Right, right, right. You know, a young man, therefore, very much has PTSD from being in the war.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter which one. I don't want to give too much information. But, and it took him years to trust, to love again, to want to be in a close relationship. And I cried the day he got married. You know, I mean, it just, it was beautiful.
Yeah, that's huge. You'll find bravery in some very interesting and unique places, specifically in the survivor community. It depends on everyone's specific trauma. For some people, bravery is going to the grocery store or making a doctor's appointment. you cannot know the associative trauma that has happened to, with, and for a person. You know, for example, triggers could be literally anything: a smell, a song, a sound, a person, a color, a car, a location, a food. It's the list is infinite. And
right.
If you don't see, you know, if you're not aware of the trigger, you don't see it happen. That's happening inside the person. They're dealing with that, you know, on internally. So getting now to talking about romantic relationships and opening yourself up again, I mean, all of that is really, really courageous.
Well, there's a couple of things I like to always tag my clients, the people I work with, back to. One is healing's like a spiral, and we can only heal any one aspect to some degree, and then we have to keep moving and living and integrating and growing, and then it's going to come back up at a different level in a different way, and we are a different person, and we can now heal it more.
Mm-hmm.
But they're never just one-shot deals. The
right.
other thing is that the past is not the past when it is in control of your present.
Right.
And you cannot let go what you have not healed. And, you know, healing simply means to make whole. And, you know, we're never going to accomplish full wholeness until they're dropping us in the ground. And that's only the wholeness for this life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always more wholeness we can find, but we can get to the place. And one of the goals I always work on my clients with in these different areas is holding on to, they already stole enough of your life. Don't let them steal any more.
Yes. Yes.
Don't let them win.
To piggyback that, I think that's part of why I always try to keep myself open to love and relationships, because I didn't want them to steal that from me too.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. And, you know, to take from that whole concept of success is the best revenge.
Mm.
And in a way, the success is you love again.
Right.
You go out again. You find that there, the power is actually in the vulnerability.
Exactly.
And it is developing the tools and the skill sets to keep the movement forward.
Right. Yeah, I think that for me, that is largely the reason why I started to do this work. It was the kind of thing that I realized, you know, I am a writer and I went to Berklee College of Music for vocal performance. I mean, singing was my intention. Nobody, you know, when they ask a little kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? Nobody says, I want to be a domestic violence survivor. So it wasn't a niche that I intended to become a subject matter expert about. But once I realized that I did have this unique and unfortunate experience, I wanted to use it to help others, because I think that's also part of the healing. And that's not part of the healing for everyone. It doesn't mean that's exactly the way it has to look. But for me, it was the kind of thing where I couldn't know all of these things and then not turn around and try to help whoever else is experiencing it as well, you know?
One of the things I focus on and I work with my clients to focus on is, you know, it wasn't okay.
Yeah.
It's never going to be okay. It's never going to be right. However, when you take your past like you have, and I've taken my past as I have, and so has Lori in areas as well that, you know, that I know of, because Lori and I go way back. And we give those tough parts of our journey meaning because of the people we help and the things that we do. And, you know, at this point, because, you know, I've been doing this full time for over 30 years, I can say I have helped thousands of people in ways that if I had had a picture perfect childhood, I never would have been able to. And with every person I help, just like with every person you help, or every person that Lori's helps, it gives us a sense of, did I want it? No. Would I want to redo it? No. But have I made meaning out of it? Have I made the world a better place? And I think that that is so important. And when I can when I can show clients how they can take that which they have survived and then learn to integrate and thrive, not in spite of, but because of, and how much meaning it brings to the world, I think it gives a whole new layer of peace to that person.
I absolutely agree with everything you just said, and I'm so glad that you said it. I think that's one of the things that when I work with my private clients too, it's a very similar, talking about inspiring and supporting people who are sort of stepping out of their shell and realizing that yes, these unfortunate things did happen, whatever they were for that individual. And maybe they will always be affected, and maybe they're different people because of it, but that doesn't mean that they're bad people. It doesn't mean that they don't deserve another chance at happiness, fulfillment, you know, satisfaction, and to being able to make something better for someone else by our own example is a really interesting gift. Like you said, I wouldn't wish to go through it again. If I could take it away, I would, but I can't. And so this is what we have. This is what we're working with.
Wow. I think it's beautiful, and I agree with everything you both just said so eloquently. I think that's the lesson for all of us, is to take the bad things and try to make some good out of it. Not that we wish it on anyone or want it for anyone.
Right.
You know?
Right. And I think that it's nice for people to know that good can come from bad, and, you know, but it doesn't necessarily have to. And sometimes, Kevin, you spoke to this a little earlier, but you had said, you know, this bad thing was bad. I'm not going to try to tell you that it wasn't. And so I'm not going to paint it a different color, because I think that's another level of cruelty and invalidation that people just don't need to experience. But to say too that although this bad thing did happen, you still have so much life ahead of you, and you still have opportunities for joy. And that's a lot of what I
hold on to, because for a while I was in a very dark place. I'm assuming this, and many people can relate to being in a very dark place as a result of all these things. And I wondered, what is even the point anymore? Why am I, why do I bother getting up? Why do I bother trying? Why do I bother rebuilding? And I've always been able to answer that question. Now, the answer has changed over the years. And now that I have my teenager, that, you know, that kiddo is number one on the list of all, why do I do this? Well, I am a mom. But even if you don't have kids, I'm able to experience joy just driving down the road on a sunny day, listening to a great song. Don't pass by those really pure moments. They come and go, I realize, but sit in them. Allow yourself to experience those. Those are your day's little gifts, you know, because we can all, they could turn in a negative experience too, you know, so hold on to those beautiful moments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think Dr. Kevin and I both guide our clients to look for the small joys in life, as you said,
mm-hmm.
even if it's just a great cup of coffee, or even a crappy cup of coffee, but you have a nice warm cup of coffee, you know?
Right.
You know, one of the things you reminded me of, Sarah, was I was 11 or 12 years old the first time that I tried to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of my abusers basically used the fact that I failed to succeed at committing suicide as proof of what a screw up I was, because I couldn't even get that right.
Mm-hmm.
And I found my very first reason to keep going. And I will always remember sitting there thinking, I am just going to live to make your life miserable, just to irritate you.
That's survival out of spite.
Hey, for my 12-year-old, it worked. I'm still here.
There you go. You do what you got to do. Yeah. I know I have also survived attempts at suicide, and I remember I actually wrote a piece in a poem. I'm not, you know, part of it is how lucky you'd have, or I'm paraphrasing now, it's my own poem, but
I get that.
How lucky you would have been if I had succeeded, because I was the only one who knew the truth of what you did, that the truth would have died with me. And even staying to tell the truth at all was another reason of mine.
That is powerful and heartbreaking at the same time.
Well, I think it falls right in that category of, despite you, I lived just so I could tell the truth on you, you rotten son of a...
You dirty, you filthy animal. Yeah.
You rotten son of a mangy dog.
Yeah. My great aunt would have said, you rascal. That was the worst it got for her. So
Sarah, yeah. you're gonna accept my invitation to come to a poetry off one of these shows?
I think you've told the world that I will be there. So I cannot disappoint.
Lori, are you gonna come and referee?
I will be there.
So we'll do it one of the last Thursdays that Lori's regularly here, unless she's looking to pick up extra days. So we'll figure out a date. And remember, audience, our time is almost up, but you could have called in at any point. But you can, Sarah, let them know where they can find you before we completely run out of time.
I can be reached via direct email at sarahspeaksup@gmail.com. That's Sarah with an H. You can look me up on social media under Sarah Speaks Up and reach out via any of those platforms. If you are interested, my book, Hiding in Plain Sight, A Glimpse into the Reality of Domestic Violence, is available on Amazon, and my contact information is in that as well.
Parting thoughts, Lori?
Just thank you. I mean, thank you.
Thank you all for having me. I really appreciate this. And to anyone who's listening, I know that this can be a tough topic, but, you know, that's why we're here, to shed light on a dark topic. So thank you all.
And Sarah, you stay on top of me, and I will get you a link to this show so you can use it on your website to have people be able to listen to this interview if you'd like.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Okay.